knew she had never met him before, yet there was something strangely familiar about him. She just couldn't put her finger on it.
Ayla of the Mamutoi. Zelandanyi now, I guess. Meet Aldenor of the Sarmunai,
Danuk said. Sarmunai? Ayla said. Suddenly she realized what was so familiar about him, his clothing, especially his shirt. It was cut and decorated in the unique style of those people she and Jandalar had involuntarily visited on their journey. Memories came rushing back. They were the people who had captured Jandalar, or rather, Ataroa's camp of Sarmunai had. Ayla, with Wolf and the horses, had tracked them and found him, but that had not been the first time she had seen a shirt made in that style. Rainik, the Mamutoi man she almost mated, had one that he had traded carvings for. Ayla suddenly realized they were staring at each other. She collected herself, stepped toward the young man with both hands held out in greeting.
In the name of Dani, the Great Earth Mother, also known as Muna, you are welcome here, Aldenor of the Sarmunai, she said.
In the name of Muna, I thank you, Ayla.
He smiled a shy grin.
You may be Mamutoi or Zelandanyi, but did you know that among the Sarmunai you are known as Sela, Mother of the Wolf Star, sent to destroy Ataroa, the Evil One? There are so many stories about you. I didn't believe you were a real person. I thought you were a legend. When Danug and Druez stopped at our camp and said they were making a journey to visit you, I asked if I could go along. Now I can't believe I'm actually meeting you.
Ayla smiled and shook her head.
I don't know about stories or legends, she said. People often believe what they want to believe.
He seems like a nice young man, she thought.
I have something for you, Ayla, Danug said. If you'll come inside, I'll give it to you.
She followed Danug into a smallish, hide-covered structure, apparently their traveling tent, and watched as he rummaged through a pack. Finally, he pulled out a small object carefully wrapped and tied with a cord.
Rainik told me to give this to you personally.
Ayla unwrapped the small package. Her eyes opened wide, and she gasped with surprise as she held the object in her hand. It was a horse, carved out of mammoth ivory, small enough to fit in her hand, but so exquisitely carved it almost looked alive. Its head was thrust forward as though straining into the wind. The stand-up mane and shaggy coat were carved with a pattern of lines that suggested the rough texture of the horse's hide, without hiding the stocky conformation of the small step horse. A shade of yellow ochre, the color of dry standing hay, had been rubbed onto the animal, matching the familiar color of one horse she knew, and a blackish color shaded the lower legs and the length of the spine.
Oh, Danuk, she's just beautiful. It's Winnie, isn't it?
Ayla smiled, but her eyes glistened with tears.
Yes, of course. He started carving this horse right after you left.
I think the hardest thing I ever did in my life was to tell Rainik that I was leaving to go with Jandalar. How is he, Danuk?
He's fine, Ayla. He mated Trishi later that summer. You know, the woman who had the baby that probably came from his spirit. She has three children now. She's feisty, but she's good for him. She'll start raving about something, and he just smiles. He says he loves her spirit. She can't really resist his smile, and she really does love him. I don't think he will ever get over you completely, though. It caused a bit of trouble between them at first.
Ayla frowned.
What kind of trouble?
Well, he lets her have her way in almost everything, and I think in the beginning she thought he was weak because he gave in so easily. She started pushing him, seeing how far she could go, Then she began demanding things, wanted him to get her this or that. He seemed to make a game out of it. No matter how outrageous, he would somehow manage to get whatever she asked for and present it with one of those smiles of his, you know.
Yes, I know,
Ayla said, smiling through wet eyes as she remembered,
so pleased with himself, as though he had just won a competition and was all full of his own cleverness.
Then she started changing everything around,
Danug continued,
his workspace, his tools, all the special things he collected and arranged. He just let her. I think he was just seeing what she would do. But I happened to be in the lodge the day she decided to move this horse. I've never seen him so angry. He didn't raise his voice or anything. He just told her to put it back. She was surprised. I don't think she really believed him. He'd always given in to her. He told her again to put it back, and when she didn't, he grabbed her wrist pretty hard and took it from her. He told her never to touch that horse again. He said if she did, he would break the mating bond and pay the price. He said he loved her, but there was one piece of him she could never have. If she couldn't accept that, she could leave. Trishy ran out of the lodge crying, but Rainick just put the horse back, then sat down and started carving. When she finally came back in, it was night. I couldn't help but overhear. Their hearth is right next to ours, and, well, I suppose I wanted to hear. She told him she wanted to stay with him. She said she loved him, had always loved him, and wanted to stay with him even if he did still love you. She promised never to touch the horse again. She didn't either. I think it gave her respect for him and made her realize how she really felt about him. He's happy, Ayla. I don't think he'll ever forget you, but he's happy.
I'll never forget him, either. I still think about him sometimes. If it hadn't been for Jandalar, I could have been happy with him. I did love him. I just loved Jandalar more. Tell me about Trishi's children, she said.
That blending of spirits has produced an interesting mixture, Danug said. The oldest is a boy. You saw him, didn't you? Trishy brought him to that summer meeting.
Yes, I saw him. He was very fair. Is he still so fair?
His skin is the whitest I've ever seen, except where it's covered with freckles. Trishy has red hair, and she's fair, but not as much as him. His eyes are pale blue, and he has fuzzy, orangey red hair. He can't stand the sun. He just burns. And if it's really bright, it hurts his eyes. But except for his color, he looks just like Rainick. It's strange to see them together. Rainick's brown skin next to Ra's white, but the same face. He's got Rainick's sense of humor, only more. Already he can make anyone laugh, and he loves to travel. If he doesn't turn out to be a traveling storyteller, I'll be surprised. He can't wait until he's old enough to go off on his own. He wanted to come with us on our journey. If he'd been a little older, I would have taken him. He'd have been good company. Trishy's little girl is a beauty. Her skin is dark, but not brown like Rainick's. Her hair is black as night, but her curls are softer. She has black eyes, serious eyes. She's a quiet, delicate little thing. But I swear that there's not a man who sees her that isn't entranced by her. She'll have no trouble finding a mate. The baby is as dark as Rainick, and though it's hard to tell yet, I think his features are going to be more like Trishy's.
It seems as though Trishy is a good addition to the lion camp, Danug. I wish I could see her children. I have a little girl, too, Ayla said, and suddenly remembered that she could have been having another one soon, were it not for her call to the deep cave. I would like to tell him that it is more than a blending of spirits that makes children, she thought.
I know. I've met Jon Ayla. She looks just like you, except she has Jandalar's eyes. I wish I could take her back with me and let her meet everyone. Nezzy would love her. I've already fallen in love with her, just like I fell in love with you when I was a boy,
Danhook said with a delighted laugh. Ayla looked so surprised, he laughed harder, and she could hear Talut's big booming laughter coming from Danhook.
In love with me?
I'm not surprised you didn't notice. Between Rainik and Jondalar, you had enough to think about. But I couldn't stop thinking about you. I dreamt about you. In fact, I still love you, Ayla. How would you like to come back to the lion camp with me?
There was a broad smile on his face and twinkle in his eye, but something more, too, a hint of wistful longing, a wish that he knew would never be fulfilled. She looked away for a moment, then changed the subject.
Tell me about the rest. How are Nezzy and Talut, Lati and Ruji?
Mother's fine. Getting older, that's all. Talut is losing his hair, and he hates it. Lati is mated, has a girl, and still talks about horses. Ruji is looking for a mate, or rather, the young men are looking at her. She's had her first rites. Tussie did, too. At the same time, Ondiji has two sons. She told me to give you her love. You never got to know her brother, Tarnig, did you? His mate has three little ones. You know, they built another earth lodge nearby. Diji and Tarnig are head woman and head man. Tuli is pleased that she can see her grandchildren nearly every day, and she has taken another mate. Barzek says she's too much woman for only one man.
Do I know him?
Ayla asked. Danhook smiled.
In fact, you do. It's Wymez.
Wymez? You mean the man of Rainik's hearth, the flint napper that Jondalar admires so much?
Ayla asked.
Yes, that Wymez. He surprised us all, even Tuli, I think. And old Mammut has gone to the next world. We have a new one, but it's hard to get used to having someone else at the third hearth.
I'm sorry to hear that. I love that old man. I've been training to be one who serves the mother, but he's the one who started it. My training is almost over,
Ayla said. She didn't want to say too much until she talked to Zelandani.
That's what Jondalar said. I always thought you would serve the mother. Mammut would never have adopted you if he didn't think so. There was a time when the lion camp thought you might be their Mammut, after the old man left this world. Ayla, you may be Zelandani here, but you are still Mammutoi, still numbered among the lion camp.
It makes me happy to hear that. No matter what names or ties I may acquire, in my heart, I will always be Ayla of the Mammutoi, she said.
You certainly did acquire some names and left a trail of stories behind you on your journey, Danhook said. Not just from the Sarmunai. I even heard about you from people who never met you. You were everything from a skilled healer and controller of surprising spiritual forces to the incarnation of the Great Earth Mother herself, a living Muta. I guess here it's Danyi, come to help her people. And Jondalar was her fair-haired and handsome mate, as they say here, her pale, shining lover. Even Wolf was an incarnation of the Wolf Star. The stories about him range from avenging beast to lovable creature who tended babies. The horses, too. They were animals of wonder that the Great Horse Spirit allowed to be controlled by you. There was one story from Aldenor's people that claimed the horses could fly and carried you and Jondalar back to your homes in the next world. I was beginning to wonder if all the stories could be about the same people, but after talking to Jondalar, I think you both had some interesting adventures.
I think people like to enlarge stories to make them seem more interesting, Ayla said. And who's to prove them wrong once the people the stories are about are gone? We just traveled back here to Jondalar's home. You no doubt have had your share of adventures.
But we didn't travel with a pair of magical horses and a wolf.
Danuk, you know there is nothing magical about those animals. You watched Jondalar train Racer, and you were there when I brought Wolf to the lodge as a tiny puppy. He's just a wolf that got used to people because he grew up with them.
Which reminds me, where is that animal? I wonder if he'll still remember me,
Danuk said. As soon as we got here, he ran off to look for Janela,
Ayla said.
Apparently, she is with her age mates doing something for the Zelandania. But I still haven't seen Jondalar. Did he say anything about going hunting?
Not to me, Danuk said. But the three of us haven't been around here that much. We're strangers from far away, but introduced by Jondalar as your kin, so we have been welcomed as kin. Everyone wants to hear our stories and ask questions about our people. We've all been asked to participate in first rites, even me, as big as I am, though I was questioned about my experience with such young women, and I think I was tested by one or two Danyi women.
The huge young man grinned with delight.
Jondalar translated for us in the beginning, but we've been learning Zelandanyi and can get by fairly well now on our own. People have been wonderful to us, but they keep wanting to give us things, and you know how hard it is to carry much when you're on a journey. In fact, I did bring something that you left behind. I gave it to Jondalar. Do you remember the piece of ivory Talut gave you when you left? The one that showed landmarks to help to get started out right on your journey?
Yes, we had to leave it behind to make room.
Laduni gave it to me to give back to you.
That must have made Jondalar happy. It was one thing he wanted to keep as a reminder of his stay with the Lion Camp.
I understand that. The Sarmunai gave me something that I will definitely keep. I'll show you.
He took out a figure of a mammoth made out of a very hard but strange kind of material.
I don't know what kind of stone it is. Aldenor says they make it, but I don't know whether to believe him.
They do make that stone. They start with muddy clay, then shape it and burn it in a very hot fire in a special enclosed space, like an oven built in the earth, until it turns to stone. I watched the Sarmuna of Three Sisters Camp do it. She is the one who discovered how to make that stone.
Ayla paused, and her eyes took on a faraway look, as though she was looking inside at a memory.
She was not an evil person, but Adaroa did turn her the wrong way for a while. The Sarmunai are an interesting people.
Jondalar told me what happened to both of you there. But Aldenor is from a different camp. We stopped overnight at Three Sisters. I thought it was strange that there were so many women, but they were very hospitable. After I talked to Jondalar, I realized that I might not have made it this far if you hadn't passed that way first. I shudder to think about it,
Danuk said. The leather entrance cover was moved aside. Danuk and Ayla looked up and saw Dalinar looking in.
If I'd known you wanted to keep her to yourself, I might have thought again before taking you along with us to this summer meeting, young man,
Dalinar said sternly, then smiled.
Can't say that I blame you. I know you haven't seen her in a long time, but there are many other people who want to talk to this young woman.
Dalinar,
Ayla said, getting up and going outside the small tent to hug him. He'd aged, but he still looked so much like Jondalar, she felt a warm glow at the sight of him.
Did Danuk and the other two come with you? How did they find you?
By accident, or it was meant to be, depending on who you ask. Some of us were out hunting. There's a river valley nearby that attracts a lot of passing herds. They saw us and indicated that they wanted to join in the hunt. We were more than happy to have three healthy young men help out. I had already been thinking that if we made some really successful hunts, enough to put some meat down for next winter and take some with us, we might go to the Zelandanyi meeting this year. Their help made a difference. We counted 6 bison kills. It wasn't until later that evening that this young man started asking about you and Jandalar and how to find the Zelandanyi, Dalinar said, indicating the huge red-haired man just emerging from the tent. Language was a bit of a problem. The only thing Danug could say was, Jandalar of the 9th cave of the Zelandanyi. I tried to tell him Jandalar was the son of my hearth, but didn't have much luck, the older man continued. Then Echazar returned from the flint mine, and Danug started talking to him in signs. He was surprised to find out Echazar could talk, but not nearly as surprised as Echazar was to see Danug and Druez talk to him in signs. When Echazar asked where they learned it, he told us about his brother, a boy he said his mother adopted, who died. He said you were the one who taught everyone the hand sign so he could talk and be understood, Ayla. That's how we managed to communicate at first. Danug and Druez talked to Echazar in signs, and he translated. I made up my mind then and told Danug we were going to the Zelandanyi summer meeting and would take them with us. The next day, Willemar and his party happened to arrive. It's amazing how good he is at communicating with people, even if he doesn't know the language.
Is Willemar here too? Ayla asked.
Yes, I'm here. Ayla spun around and smiled with delight to see the old trade master. They hugged with warmth and affection.
Did you come with the Lanzadanyi too?
No, we didn't arrive with them, Willemar said. We still had a few other stops to make to finish out the round. We got here a few days ago. I was just getting ready to leave for the 9th cave. We actually came a little early this year, Dalinar said. I knew where the 9th would probably set up camp, so we're close by. I happened to be one of the people who saw the 9th cave coming, Danug said. When I saw the horses from a distance, I knew it had to be your people, Ayla. I was really disappointed when you were not with them, though I was glad to see Jandalar. At least he could speak Mamutoi. I recognized Jan Ayla as your daughter right away, especially when I saw her sitting on the back of that gray horse. If you hadn't come, I was going to go back with the 9th cave and surprise you. But you surprised us instead, Danug said.
You are a surprise, Danug, a welcome one, and you can still come and visit the 9th cave, you know,
Ayla said, then turned to Dalinar.
I am glad you decided to come with the Lanzadanyi. Is Jerrica with you? Marthona will be so disappointed not to see all of you.
I was sorry to hear she wasn't coming. Jerrica was looking forward to seeing her, too. It's amazing what good friends they've turned out to be. How is Marthona?
Not entirely well, Ayla said, shaking her head. She complains about her aching joints, but it's more than that. She has pain in her chest and trouble breathing when she exerts herself too much. I always did plan to come to the meeting as soon as I could, but I hated to leave her. She did seem much better when I left, though.
Do you really think she's better? Willemar asked. His eyes had become serious.
She said if she had felt as good earlier when the 9th cave left, she might have come, but I don't think she could walk the whole way.
Someone could have carried her, Dalinar said. I carried Hochiman on my shoulders all the way to the great waters of the west, twice before he died. Dalinar turned to Danug. Hochiman was the mate of Jerrica's mother. They traveled all the way from the endless seas of the east. His tears mingled with the salt of the great waters of the west, but they were tears of joy. It was his greatest wish to go as far as the land went, farther than anyone ever did. I've never heard of anyone who traveled farther.
We remembered that story, Dalinar, and wanted to carry her, Ayla said, but she didn't want to ride on Jandalar's shoulders. I think she felt it would be too undignified. She didn't want to ride on Winnie either. I asked her, but she didn't want to do that either. She likes the horses, but the idea of riding one always did scare her.
Aelin noticed the travois, the simple construction of poles and cross mats, now unloaded on the ground.
I wonder, do you think she would mind riding on the pole drag, Willemar?
For that matter, a few people could take turns carrying her on a litter, Dalinar volunteered. With four people, one on each corner, it would be easy. She's not heavy.
And she could sit up. She wouldn't have to look backwards. I'm tempted to tell Jandalar to go back and get her, but I haven't seen him yet. Has he been with you, Dalinar?
Ayla asked.
No, I haven't seen him all day. He could be anywhere. You know how it is at a meeting like this, Dalinar said. I haven't even seen Bokovan all day.
Bokovan? Are Joplea and Echazar here? I thought Echazar said he'd never come back after the big fuss that was made over his joining with Joplea.
It took a lot of persuading. Jerrica and I thought he should come for Bokovan's sake. He's going to need to find a mate someday, too, and there aren't enough Lanzadanyi yet. All the youngsters are raised like siblings, and you know how it is when children grow up together. They don't usually think of each other as potential mates. I told Echazar that it was only a few people who objected, but he wasn't convinced. It wasn't until this big Mamutoi and his cousin and friend came that he decided to go. They helped most of all.
What did they do?
That's just it. They didn't do anything. You know how people always seem to feel uncomfortable around Echazar when they first meet him. You never did, but you were an exception, Dalinar said. I think that's why he's always had a special fondness for you. Thanug didn't either, just started talking to him in signs. The young Sarmunai didn't seem terribly bothered by Echazar either. Apparently, they don't think of the ones of mixed spirits with as much antagonism as some of the Zelandanyi.
I think that's true, Ayla said. Mixtures seem more common among them, and more accepted, though not entirely, especially when the look of the clan is as strong as it is in Echazar. He might have some problem, even there.
Not with Aldenor. All three of those young men accepted him as easily as anyone else. They didn't make him an exception, or make special efforts to be nice to him. They just treated him like any other young man. It made Echazar realize, I think, that not everyone would hate him or object to him. He could make friends, and so could Bokovan. In fact, that young couple that mated the same time you did, Jondakam and Lavila, they have all but adopted Bokovan. He's over there all the time, playing with their youngsters, and all the rest of the children that always seem to be running around their camp. I wonder sometimes how they put up with having so many children there all the time, Dalinar said.
Lavila has no end of patience, Ayla said. I think she loves it.
She turned to Thanug.
You will go with us back to the Ninth Cave, won't you? We haven't even started catching up on what everyone in the Lion Camp is doing.
We were rather hoping to winter with you, but I'd like to go all the way to the Great Waters of the West before I return. Besides, I don't think there is any way we're going to get Aldenor away from here before spring, and maybe not then,
Thanug said, smiling at his friend. Ayla looked at him questioningly.
Why not?
When you see him around Jandalar's sister, you'll know.
Volara?
Yes, Volara. He is absolutely smitten with her, completely, totally out of his mind over her, and I think the feeling may be mutual. At least she certainly doesn't seem to mind spending time with him.
a lot of time with him. Though Danuk had spoken Mamutoi, he was grinning. His language was similar, and he had learned quite a bit of Mamutoi on their journey, and her name was the same word in any language. Ayla saw Aldenor's face flush. She raised her eyebrows and then smiled. The tall, graceful young woman that Falara had become easily commanded attention everywhere she went. She had her mother's natural elegance and Willemar's easy charm, and as Jondalar had always predicted she would be, Falara was beautiful. Her beauty was not quite the consummate manifestation of perfection that Jondalar had been in his youth, and for the most part still was. Her mouth was a little too generous, her eyes were spaced a bit too wide, her light brown hair was a touch too fine, but the minor imperfections only made her more approachable and appealing. Falara had had no lack of suitors, but none had quite excited her fancy or fulfilled her unexpressed expectations. Her lack of interest in choosing a mate was driving her mother to distraction. She wanted to see a grandchild from her own daughter. After spending so much time with the woman, she had grown to understand her better and knew that Falara's regard for the young Sarmunai would be of great consequence to Marthona. The biggest question was, would Aldenor decide to stay with the Zelandanyi, or would Falara go with him back to the Sarmunai? Marthona needs to be here, Ayla thought.
Willemar, have you noticed Folara's interest in this young Sarmunai?
Ayla asked, smiling at the self-consciously blushing visitor.
Now that you mention it, I guess they have spent a lot of time together since I've been here.
You know Marthona, Willemar. You know she would want to be here if Folara is getting serious about a young man, especially one who may want her to go with him back to his home. I'm sure she would come here if she could.
You're right, Ayla. But is she strong enough?
You said something about carrying her on a litter, Dalinar. How long do you think it would take for a few strong young men to run back to the Ninth Cave and bring her here?
No more than a few days for good runners. Maybe twice that to bring her back. And however long it would take her to prepare. Do you really think she's well enough?
Dalinar said.
Would Jerrica be well enough if it was Joplea?
Ayla asked. Dalinar nodded with understanding.
Marthona seemed much better when I left, and if she doesn't have to exert herself, I think she would be as well here, where there are so many people to help her, as she is at the Ninth Cave. She likes the horses, to watch them or pet them, and I think, under the circumstances, she'd even ride the pole drag to get here. But I believe she'd be more comfortable sitting up on a litter and able to talk to people along the way. I'd ask Jondalar, but he doesn't seem to be around anywhere. Could you and Dalinar and maybe Joharan arrange it, Willemar?
I think we could do that, Ayla. You're probably right. Falara's mother needs to be here if she's getting serious about mating, especially to a foreigner.
Mother! Mother, you came! You finally came!
A young voice called out. It was an interruption Ayla was delighted to hear. She turned and smiled, and her eyes lit up as she held out her arms to the young girl running towards her, with the wolf happily loping beside her. Her daughter fairly flew into her arms.
I missed you so much, Ayla said, hugging her close, then pulled back to look at her and hugged her again. I can't believe how much you have grown, Janela,
she said when she put her down. Zelandani had followed the child back at a slower pace, but smiled warmly at Ayla as she approached. After they had embraced in greeting, she asked,
You finished your watching?
Yes, and glad of it. But it was exciting to see the sun stop and turn back and mark it myself. The only problem was not having anyone there to share it with who really understood. I kept thinking of you,
Ayla said. Zelandani observed the young woman closely. There was a different air about her. Ayla had changed. The woman tried to find it. Ayla has lost weight. Has she been sick? She should be starting to show, but her waistline was thinner and her breasts were smaller. Oh, Donnie, she thought, she isn't pregnant anymore. She must have miscarried. But there was something else, a new assurance in her manner, an acceptance of the tragedy, a self-confident poise. She knew who she was, and who she was Zelandani. She has been called. She must have lost the baby then.
We're going to have to talk, aren't we, Ayla?
Zelandani, who was first, said, stressing her name. She could be called Ayla, but she wasn't Ayla anymore.
Yes,
the young woman said. She didn't have to say more. She knew that the one who was first among those who served the mother understood.
We should do it soon.
Yes, we should.
And Ayla, I am sorry. I know you wanted the baby, she said quietly.
Before Ayla could respond, more people crowded around. Nearly all her close friends and kin came to the camp to greet her. Everyone seemed to be there except Jandalar, and no one seemed to know where he was. Usually, when a person was leaving the meeting camp to go off by themselves or with just one or two others, someone was told where they were going. Ayla might have begun to worry, but no one else seemed to. Most people stayed to have a meal or a snack. They recounted events that had taken place, talked about people, who was getting mated, who'd had another child or was expecting one, who had decided to sever the knot or take a second mate. Friendly gossip. In the afternoon, people started wandering off to other activities. Ayla arranged her sleeping roll and the rest of the belongings that she had brought with her. She was glad she had taken the horses to the meadow in the woods earlier, and the corral that had been fenced for the horses, not so much to keep them in as to keep people out. Horses in a meadow were fair game under normal circumstances, though everyone knew about the horses the Ninth Cave brought with them, just to leave no doubt that these were, in fact, those special horses, the area was conspicuously fenced. Jandalar and Janela often took them to the grassy steps to ride, or just to let them graze. But whenever they were not in the enclosure, she knew someone was with them. Janela left with Zelandani and Wolf to go back to the area of the Zelandania to finish working out the details of the special evening that was planned. Ayla decided to give Winnie a good grooming after the hot, dusty ride, and went to the horse meadow with soft pieces of leather and teasel brushes. She brushed Racer and Gray a bit, too, just to give them a scratching and some attention. She looked at the small stream that flowed along the edge of the grassy glen before emptying into the river and remembered the last time the meeting was in this location. There was a swimming hole some distance upstream, she recalled. Not many people knew about it, because it was far enough away from the meeting camp to make it inconvenient for general use. She hadn't known her adopted people as well then, and she and Jandalar used to go there when they wanted to get away from the crowds and spend some time alone together. A swim would feel good right now, she thought, and the river is muddy from so much use. She started walking upstream toward the bend in the small stream that cut a deeper hole near the outside edge and left a grassy strand with a beach of small pebbles on the inside curve. She smiled, thinking about Jandalar and what they used to do beside that stream. She'd been thinking about him so much, thinking about how he could make her feel. She felt herself warming to his imagined touch, and even noticed a wetness between her legs. Wouldn't it be fun to try to make another baby, she thought. As she approached the swimming hole, she heard splashing and then voices and almost turned back. Sounds like someone else has found this place, she thought. I'd hate to disturb another couple looking for a place to be alone. But it might not be a couple. It might just be some people going for a swim. As she approached, she heard a woman's voice and then a man's. She couldn't make out the words, but something about that voice bothered her. She moved as silently as she ever had when stalking an animal with her sling. She heard more talking, then a deep laugh of sheer abandon. She knew that laugh, though she hadn't heard it much recently, and it was rare enough in any case. Then she heard the woman's voice and recognized it. She had a peculiar sinking feeling in the pit of her stomach as she looked through the bushes that skirted the small beach. Chapter 32 Jandalar and Morona were just coming out of the water as Ayla looked through the bushes. With a stab of anguish, she watched Morona turn to face Jandalar, put her arms around him, and press her naked body close to his, then reach up to kiss him. Jandalar bent down to meet her lips. With fascinated horror, she watched his hands begin to caress her body. How many times had she felt his knowing hands? Ayla wanted to run, but she couldn't move. They moved a few steps closer towards a soft leather hide spread out on the grass just in front of her. She could see that he wasn't really aroused, but no one had seen him since she arrived. He'd been gone all day, and it was obvious to her that they had already used the leather blanket at least once. Morona pressed against him again, kissed him deeply as though with great hunger, then slowly dropped down in front of him. With a languid, knowing laugh, Morona enclosed her mouth around his flaccid manhood while Jandalar stood looking down at her. Ayla could see his mounting excitement in his expression of intense pleasure. She had never seen his face when she did that to him. Was that how he looked? As Morona moved rhythmically back and forth, his tumescent organ pushed her farther away from him as it began to extend. It was agony for Ayla to see him with her. She could hardly breathe. Her stomach knotted in pain. Her head pounded. She had never experienced this kind of feeling before. Was this anguish jealousy? Was this how Jandalar felt when I went to Rainik's bed, she thought? Why didn't he tell me? I didn't know then. I never felt jealousy before, and he never told me. He only said it was my right to choose who I wanted. That means it's his right to be there with Morona. Her eyes filled with tears. She couldn't stand it. She had to get away. She turned and started to run blindly through the small woods, but she tripped on an exposed root and crashed to the ground.
Who's there? What's going on?
Ayla heard Jandalar's voice call out. She scrambled to her feet and started off again as Jandalar pushed the brush aside.
Ayla?
Ayla,
he said in shocked surprise.
What are you doing here?
She turned to face the man who was coming after her.
I didn't mean to interfere, she said, trying to compose herself. You have the right to couple with whoever you want, Jandalar, even Morona.
Morona pushed through the screen of bushes and stood close to Jandalar, pressing her body against him.
That's right, Ayla, she said with an exultant laugh. He can couple with whoever he wants. What do you expect a man to do when his mate is too busy for him? We have coupled often, and not only this summer. Why do you think I moved back to the Ninth Cave? He didn't want me to tell you, but now that you've found out, you might as well know the whole story.
She laughed again. Then with a vicious sneer, she said,
You may have stolen him from me, Ayla, but you haven't been able to keep him to yourself.
I didn't steal him from you, Morona. I didn't even know you until I arrived here. Jandalar chose me of his own free will. Now he can choose you if he wants. But tell me, do you really love him, or are you just trying to cause trouble?
Ayla said. Then she turned, and with as much dignity as she could gather, she hurried away. Jandalar shrugged off the woman hanging on him and caught up with Ayla in a few strides.
"Ayla, please, wait. Let me explain," he said.
"What is there to explain? Marona is right. How could I expect anything else? You were in the middle of something, Jandalar. Why don't you go back and finish it?"
she said, starting away again.
"I'm sure Marona will be able to arouse you once more. She had you well on your way."
"I don't want Marona. Not if I can have you, Ayla,"
Jandalar said, suddenly afraid he might lose her. Marona looked at him with surprise. She meant nothing to him, she realized. She had meant nothing to him all along. She had made herself available, and he had found her an expedient way to take care of his urges. Marona glared at them both with anger, but Jandalar didn't notice. He was concentrated on Ayla. Now he wished he hadn't given in to Marona's invitations, hadn't used her so casually. He was so intent on Ayla, on trying to think of something to say that could somehow explain how he felt, that he didn't even notice when the woman he had so recently been with stormed past him with her clothes bunched up in her arms. But Ayla did. As a man, after he returned from his stay with Dalinar, Jandalar had always had his choice of women, but he had never really loved one. Nothing ever matched the powerful intensity of his first love, and his memory of those overwhelming emotions had been made stronger by the appalling scandal and disgrace it had brought on both Solina and himself. She had been his Dunyi woman, his instructor and guide in the ways that a man should behave with a woman, but he was not supposed to fall in love with her. She was not supposed to allow it. He had come to believe that he would never love a woman again. He had finally concluded that as a penalty imposed by the mother for his youthful indiscretion, he would forever be unable to fall in love. Until Ayla. And he'd had to travel for more than a year to an entirely different and unfamiliar place to find her. He loved Ayla more than his life. It overwhelmed him. He would do anything for her, go any place for her. He would give his life for her, the only person for whom he felt a love as strong, if of a different nature, was Janela.
"You should be grateful she is there to satisfy your needs, Jandalar,"
Ayla said, still hurting and trying to cover the pain.
"I am going to be even busier than ever now. I have been called. I will do as she wishes now. I will be as a child of the great Earth Mother. I am Selendani."
"You were called? Ayla, when?"
His voice was full of frantic worry. He'd seen some of the Zelendania returning from their first call, and he'd seen some, found later, that had not.
"I should have been there. I could have helped you."
"No, Jandalar. You couldn't have helped me. No one can help. It must be done alone. I survived, and the mother gave me a great gift, but I had to make a sacrifice for it. She wanted our baby, Jandalar. I lost it in the cave,"
Ayla said, with as much dignity as she could muster.
"Our baby? What baby? Janela was with me."
"The baby that was started when I came down from the cliff early one night. I suppose I should consider myself lucky that you hadn't already been with Marona that night, or I wouldn't have had a baby to sacrifice,"
she said with hollow bitterness.
"You were pregnant when you were called? Oh, great mother."
He was feeling panicky. He didn't want her to leave like that. What could he say to keep her there, to keep her talking?
"Ayla, I know you think that's how new life starts, but you can't be sure."
"Yes, Jandalar, I can. The Great Mother told me. That was the gift I received in exchange for my baby's life."
She said it with such haunting, painful certainty, it left no room for doubt.
"I thought we might try to start another. But I can see you are too busy for me.
He stood there, stunned as she walked away.
Oh, Donnie, great mother, what have I done?
Jandalar cried out in anguish.
I've made her stop loving me. Oh, why did she have to see us?
He stumbled after her, forgetting his clothes. Then, as she hurried away, he dropped to his knees and followed her with only his eyes. Look at her, he thought. She's so thin. It must have been so hard for her. Some acolytes die. What if Ayla had died? I wasn't even there to help her. Why didn't I stay behind with her? I should have known she was almost ready. Her training was nearly over. But I wanted to come to the summer meeting. I didn't think what might happen to her. All I could think of was myself. As Ayla was lost to sight, he hunched forward, closed his eyes, and buried his face in his hands, as though trying not to see what he had done.
Why did I couple with Morona?
He moaned aloud. Ayla has never coupled with anyone but me, he thought. Not since Rainik, not since we left the Mamutoi. Even at ceremonies and festivals to honor the mother, when almost everyone chooses someone else, she has never chosen anyone but me. People talk about it. How many men have looked at me with envy, thinking what great pleasure I must give her for her never to choose anyone else.
Why did Ayla have to see us?
I never thought she would get here in the daytime. I thought she'd ride all day and get here late. I thought it was safe to come here during the day. I never wanted to cause Ayla pain. She's had enough pain. And now she's lost a baby. I didn't even know she was going to have another baby, and she lost it. Did it really start that night? It was such an incredible night. I could hardly believe it when she came to bed and woke me up. Will it ever be like that again? She said the mother wanted our baby. Was it our baby? In exchange, Donnie gave her a gift. Ayla was given a gift from the mother. The mother told her it was our baby, my baby, and hers.
Did Ayla lose my baby?
Jandalar said, his forehead knotted with the familiar frown. Why did she come here? She said she wanted to start another baby. Was she looking for me? We always came to this swimming hole the last time the meeting was here. I should have thought about that. I shouldn't have brought Morona here. Especially Morona. I knew how Ayla would feel if she found out about her. That's why I made Morona promise never to tell.
Why did she have to see us?
He beseeched the vacant woods.
Have I become so used to her never choosing anyone else that I've forgotten what it was like for me?
He recalled the bitter pain and desolation he had felt the time she chose Rainik. I know how she must have felt when she saw me with Morona, he thought, just the way I did when Rainik told her to come to his bed, and she went. But she didn't know then. She thought she was supposed to go with him. How would I feel if she chose someone else now? I tried to drive her away then because I was so hurt, but she still loved me. She made a matrimonial tunic for me, even when she was promised to Rainik. Jandalar felt the same wretched torment at the thought of losing her now as he had when he thought he was going to lose her to Rainik. Only this time it was worse. This time he was the one who had hurt her. Ayla ran blindly ahead, tears clouding her vision, but they could not wash away her misery. She had thought about Jandalar at the ninth cave, dreamed about him at night, hungered for him on her way, and pushed herself to get here so she could be with him. She couldn't return to the camp and face all the people. She needed to be alone. She stopped at the horse enclosure and led Winnie out, put the horse blanket on her back, and climbed on, then raced her towards the open grassland. Winnie was still tired from the trip, but responded to the woman's urging and galloped across the plains. Ayla could not get the picture of Morona and Jandalar out of her mind. She could think of nothing else, and soon forgot about directing the horse, but simply rode her. The mare slowed when she felt the woman cease to actively direct her and turned back towards the camp at a slow walk, stopping to graze now and then. It was growing dark by the time they reached the meeting site and cooling down fast, but Ayla felt nothing except the deep, numbing cold inside her. The horse did not feel her passenger take control again until they reached the horse grove and saw several people. "Ayla, people have been wondering where you've been," Proliva said. "John Ayla was here looking for you, but after she ate, she went to Lavila's to play with Bokovan when you didn't return."
"I've been riding," Ayla said.
"Jandalar finally turned up," Joharan said. "He came stumbling into the camp a while ago. I told him you were looking for him, but he just mumbled something incoherent."
Her eyes were glazed as she walked into the camp. She passed by Zelandani without greeting her, without even seeing her. The woman eyed her sharply. She knew something was wrong.
"Ayla, we haven't seen much of you since you arrived," the Danyer said, surprised that she'd had to speak first.
"I guess not," Ayla said.
It was plain to Zelandani that Ayla's thoughts were somewhere else. Jandalar's incoherent mumbling hadn't been unclear to her, even if she hadn't understood the words. His actions were clear enough. She had also seen Morona emerge from the small wooded area, looking disheveled, but not on the normal path used by most members of the Ninth Cave. She came to their camp from a different direction, went directly into the tent she had been sharing, and began to pack up her things. She told Proliva some friends from the Fifth Cave wanted her to stay with them. Zelandani had been aware of Jandalar's dalliance with Morona from the beginning. At first, she thought there was little harm in it. She knew his true feelings for Ayla and thought Morona would be just a passing fancy, something to relieve him at a time when Ayla had other demands on her and no choice but to be away at times. But she hadn't counted on Morona's obsession to get him back and to get back at Ayla, or her ability to insinuate herself upon him. Their physical attraction had always been strong. Even in the past, it had been the primary focus of their relationship. Sometimes Zelandani had suspected it was the only thing they had had in common. The Danyer guessed that Ayla hadn't fully recovered from her ordeal in the cave. Her loss of weight and the gaunt hollows in her face would have given her away even if she hadn't seen it in Ayla's eyes. Zelandani had seen too many acolytes return from a calling, emerging from a cave or returning from wandering the steppe, not to know the danger of the ordeal. She herself almost didn't survive. Since Ayla lost a baby at the same time, she would very likely also be suffering the melancholy most women felt after giving birth, which was often worse after miscarrying. But the one who was first had seen more than the suffering Ayla had endured in the cave in her eyes now. She saw pain, the sharp, chilling pain of jealousy, with all the related feelings of betrayal, anger, doubt, and fear. "She loves him too much. It's not hard to do," the woman once known as Zolina recalled. The first had often wondered during the past few years how a woman who loved a man so much could be Zelandani too. But Ayla's talent was formidable. In spite of her love for the man, it could not be ignored. And if anything, his feeling for her was even stronger. But as much as he loved her, Jandalar was a man with strong drives. It was difficult for him to ignore them. It was especially true when there were no societal constraints against it, and someone as intimately familiar with him as Morona was using every faculty she possessed to encourage him. It was too easy to fall into the habit of going to her rather than bothering Ayla when she was busy. Zelandani knew Jandalar hadn't mentioned anything about his ongoing liaison to Ayla, and instinctively, others who cared about them had tried to shield her. They hoped Ayla would not find out, but the Danyar knew if he continued it was a vain hope. He should have known it, too. In spite of how well she had learned the ways of the Zelandani and seemed to fit in, Ayla had not been born to them. Their ways were not natural to her. Zelandani almost wished the summer meeting was over. She would like to be able to watch the young woman, make sure she was all right. But the last part of the summer meeting was a very busy time for the one who was first. She observed the young woman, trying to discern the extent of her feelings over her discovery of Jandalar's encounters with Morona and what effects it would have. At Proliva's urging, Ayla accepted a plate of food, but she did little more than push it around. She dumped the food and cleaned the plate, then returned it.
"I wish Janela would come back. Do you know how long she'll be gone?" Ayla said. "I'm sorry I wasn't here when she came."
"You could go to Lavila's and get her," Proliva said. "Lavila would love it if you came to visit. I didn't see where Jandalar went. He may be there, too."
"I'm really tired," Ayla said. "I don't think I'd be very good company. I'm going to bed early, but will you send Janela in when she comes?"
"Are you feeling all right, Ayla?" Proliva asked, finding it hard to believe that she would just go to bed. She had been trying to find Jandalar all day, and now she wouldn't even walk a little ways to look for him.
"I'm fine. I'm just tired,"
Ayla said, heading for one of the large circular dwellings that ringed the central fireplace. A wall of sturdy vertical panels made of overlapped cattail leaves which shed rain was attached to the outside of a circle of poles sunk into the ground. A second interior wall of panels, woven out of flattened bulrush stems, was attached to the inside of the poles, leaving an airspace between for extra insulation to make it cooler on hot days and, with a fire inside, warmer on cool nights. The roof was a thick thatch of phragmite reeds sloping down from a center pole, supported by a circular frame of slender alder poles lashed together. The smoke escaped through a hole near the center. The construction provided a fairly large enclosed space that could be left open or divided into smaller areas with movable interior panels. Sleeping rolls were spread out on mats made of bulrushes, tall phragmite reeds, cattail leaves, and grasses around a central fireplace. Ayla partially undressed and crawled into her sleeping roll, but was far from ready to sleep. When she closed her eyes, all she could see was the scene of Jandalar with Morona, and her mind whirled with the implications. Ayla knew that among the Zelandani, jealousy was not condoned, though she was not as aware that behavior designed to provoke it was even less acceptable. People recognized that jealousy existed and fully understood its cause, and more important, its often damaging effects. But in a harsh land, often overwhelmed by long and bitter glacial winters, survival depended on mutual cooperation and assistance. The unwritten strictures against any behavior that could undermine the necessary goodwill required to maintain that unanimity and understanding were strongly enforced by social customs. In such adverse conditions, children were especially at risk. Many died young, and while the community in general was important to their well-being, a close, caring family was considered essential. Though most commonly families began with a woman and man, they could be extended in any number of ways, not only with grandparents, aunts, uncles, and cousins, but so long as it was agreeable to everyone involved, a woman might select more than one man. A man might choose two or more women, or even multiple couples might join. The only exception was the prohibition of close family members joining. Siblings could not mate with each other, or those recognized as close cousins, for example. Other relationships were highly disapproved, though not expressly forbidden, such as a young man and his Danyi woman. Once the family was formed, customs and practices had developed to encourage its continuity. Jealousy did not favor long-term bonds, and various measures to alleviate its detrimental effects were understood. Passing attractions could often be appeased by the socially approved festivals to honor the mother. Incidental relationships outside the family were usually overlooked if they were conducted with restraint and discretion. If the appeal of a mate was waning or a stronger attraction developed, incorporation into the family was preferable to breaking it apart. And when nothing would serve except to sever the knot, there were always penalties of some sort levied against one or another or several of the people involved to discourage breaking apart, particularly when there were children. Penalties might consist of continued assistance and support of the family for a period of time, sometimes coupled with restrictions against forming a new bond for a similar period of time. Or the penalty might be paid all at once, particularly if one or more of the people wanted to move away. There were no hard and fast rules. Each situation was judged individually within generally known customs by a number of people, usually those with no direct interest, who were known to have qualities of wisdom, fairness, and leadership. If, for example, a man wanted to sever the knot with his mate and leave a family to mate with another woman, there would have to be a waiting period, the duration determined by several factors, one of which might be if the other woman was pregnant. During the wait, they would be urged to join the family rather than break the bond. If there was too much antipathy for the new woman to want to join or for her to be accepted into the family, the man could break the existing bond, but he could be required to assist in the support of the original family for some stated length of time. Or some total amount of stored foods, tools, implements, or whatever that could be traded could be paid at once. A woman could also leave, and especially if she had children and was living at her mate's cave, might return to the cave she was born to, or move to the cave of another man. If some or all of the children stayed with the mate, or if a woman left a mate who was sick or disabled, a woman might have to pay a penalty. If they were living at her home cave, she could ask for the cave to make an unwanted mate leave. His mother's cave would then be required to accept him. Usually, there would be a reason given. A mate was cruel to her or her children, or he was lazy and didn't provide adequately, although it might not be the real reason. It could be that he wasn't paying enough attention to her, or that she was interested in pursuing someone else, or simply that she was no longer interested in living with him, or any other man. Occasionally, one or the other or both simply said they no longer wished to live together. The cave's concern was primarily for the children, and if they were provided for or grown, almost any arrangement that people chose to make was acceptable. If there were no children involved and no other extenuating circumstances, such as an illness of a family member, the knot could be severed, the relationship broken, with relative ease by either the woman or the man, usually involving little more than cutting a symbolic knot in a rope and moving out. In any of those situations, jealousy could be most disruptive, but in any case was not tolerated. The cave would step in if necessary. So long as it was agreeable and did not cause problems between caves or disrupt the relationships of others, people could make almost any arrangements they wanted. Of course, nothing kept anyone from avoiding a penalty by simply packing up and moving away. But other caves usually learned about most separations sooner or later and did not hesitate to exert social pressures as well. He or she would not be driven out, but would not be made very welcome either. A person would have to live alone or move far away to